and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The judge in the trial of Daniel Penny, accused of using a deadly chokehold on a subway passenger in New York, has dismissed the manslaughter charge after the jury deadlocked. Legal analyst Jessica Levinson on what's next.
They're trying to figure out if Penny acted in a way such that under the statute, they can find that he's negligent, that his actions led to this death, and that he should have known better.
To the latest now on the search for the person who killed a healthcare CEO this week in Manhattan, CBS's Tom Hansen.
New York City police have now collected more than 200 images of the possible suspect. Pictures from the lobby of a Manhattan hostel show his full face.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says she won't speculate about further presidential pardons.
I'm not going to get ahead of the president, but what I can say is that the president is reviewing other pardons and commutations.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Clark County has a new sheriff. Carrie Kern will complete the remainder of the unexpired term that ends in January 2027. Governor Tony Evers appointed Kern to fill the vacancy created by Sheriff Scott Haynes' resignation. Athletes will continue to have seamless access to sports medicine with a renewed partnership. UW-Stevens Point and Marshfield Clinic Health System will keep working together with an agreement signed through June 2027. This partnership builds on the high quality of comprehensive sports medicine care provided to student athletes. There are 7 full-time and several casual licensed athletic trainers supporting 26 collegiate teams of approximately 800 students. This medical model allows the sports medicine team to be active with preventive resources. They will be able to identify injuries early and provide a rapid response to care and recovery. Lots of jobs and lots of investment are coming to Kenosha County. Stuart J. Waddles has more.
Pharmaceutical giant Eli Lilly has plans for a $3 billion expansion of its Pleasant Prairie facility. Drug maker is looking to boost production of diabetes and obesity medicines. The project will add 750 highly skilled jobs to the current workforce of over 100 employees. Construction is set to start next year with 2,000 workers hired to build the new addition. Governor Evers praised the project and the region. Between Eli Lilly and Microsoft, there's more than $6 billion of development going on in southeastern Wisconsin.
The Marshfield Police Department will have new office hours starting next month. Beginning on January 3rd, their front office will close at noon on Fridays. They will still have officers on duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but the record specialist will not be working after noon on Fridays. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Bucks are in Boston. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's the Bucks and the Boston Celtics, and Milwaukee finally has Chris Middleton returning after having surgery on both ankles last summer. Former Bucks star Drew Holiday, now with the Celtics, was asked today about what Middleton means to the Bucks lineup.
I mean, just knowing him personally, I know that if they ever need a bucket or a basket, he can control that. He can take over that. I think mid-range, getting to a spot, kind of having like a one-on-one game where it's a lot different from driving to the basket and taking 3 and 4 people with you.
In Madison, the women's college volleyball tournament continues. Wisconsin faces number 7th-ranked Georgia Tech tonight. NFL, the Packers losing 34-31 to the Lions. I asked tight end Tucker Kraft about the Lions head coach decision on going for it on fourth down rather than just kick the field goal.
We know that this offense, it's something they do. Dan Campbell, it's Danger Dan. That's what they call him, I guess.
That's Packers tight end Tucker Kraft with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Ho, ho, the holidays are here, and it's time to pick a present from the grown-up gift list with Civic Media's statewide text-to-win contest. Listen while you work for the keywords to text for your chance to win $100 cash, an overnight vacation at Chula Vista Resort, and be entered to win one of the grand prizes, a robot vacuum, new luggage, humidifier, espresso machine, and more on the grown-up gift list at civicmedia.us. Just download the Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 11, 1, and 4 for your chance to win starting Monday morning. Ho, ho, ho!
Mostly cloudy this afternoon. Our high today, 25. The wind west at 5 to 15. Tonight, 14. Tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, 40. On Sunday, partly cloudy with a high of 44. With some rain by late Sunday into Monday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 30.
Did you know that our Pet of the Week show on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR has helped over 100 animals find their forever homes by connecting with listeners? This is only made possible due to local area businesses, and we hope to help 100 more. Listen to 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR Pet of the Week on Thursdays at 9 AM and find that special friend you've been looking for, or learn how you can help with current needs. Made possible by sponsors like you who help keep this program running for all of the animals in this community.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Cash Patel, who Trump has nominated to be the head of the FBI, saying he wants to basically shut down the main parts of the FBI. Bill Barr, MAGA Republican Attorney General to Donald Trump. Quote, the very idea of moving Patel into a role like this showed a shocking detachment from reality. Unquote. This is not the left calling out Patel. This is the right.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
Monday morning, we're in Washington, D.C. to talk about the Trump transition and how progressives need to reform their year-round campaign tactics.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Albaugh Show.
Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Friday, December 6th, 2024. I have your host, James J. Mailoff, with you. In part two today, we're going to speak with Phil Brown and Liz Stern from the Southfield County Historical Museum. We're going to talk about their famous Christmas tree walk. Looking forward to that. Always fun talking with Phil. Always a good conversation with our Wisconsin State Representative, Scott Krug. Scott is with us on the phone right now. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you today?
Doing good. Appreciate you being here with us, Scott. Always being able to make the time. I know that we've talked about this over the years, whether it's you pulling over at Pritzel's so that you could get the call into us or whatever it takes, you always seem to make it work. We really appreciate that, and our listeners really do. And especially now, we haven't gotten to talk to you since the election. Want to congratulate you on being reelected. How did that feel?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you always put in as much work as you can, and when it pays off, it's good. I mean, and I'm excited to get back to work here in Madison, and we've been grinding the gears already. Got back, the week after election, actually the day after the election, I was already down to the Capitol and getting ready again for the next iteration here.
Scott, we'll talk more about that in a moment, but I also wanted to tag that with the fact that you were also elected to leadership. You will be the assistant majority leader in the 25-26 session. What does that mean for you, both personally and work-wise?
Yeah, I think just kind of seeing where we were on, the numbers in the chamber and seeing how close the majorities are and knowing that there's going to need to be some more level-headed leadership and cooperation and coordination between the parties, I decided to run for leadership, and taking on this role is going to be a change. I'm not going to chair a committee anymore. I'm not going to do the normal type of day-to-day type stuff, but I'll be more behind the scenes, working with both parties to create an agenda and get bills across the chambers over to the Senate and help them understand why we need to do things. So it's a new challenge. It's exciting. It's, it's something I've thought about doing for quite a long time, and now finally pulled the trigger and got it done.
And congratulations on that. And I have to tell you, though, one of the more unsurprising things to happen in this political cycle to me, having gotten to work with you for years and having these conversations with you, I see you, and I hope this isn't a bad thing. I see you as a very purple person, a purple candidate. And I understand that I would say the majority of things, if not all of them, you tend to lean towards a Republican side. But I do think that you are a style of Republican that we around in this area, certainly in central Wisconsin and in your districts, they're more familiar with than maybe some. And I certainly think that you are able. Do you like how I worded that one, man? I danced around that one.
you sound like a politician.
Yeah, it might have a future. No, I don't. One of the things that I appreciate about you is that, and with that, there's every once in a while there's crossovers with you and Senator Teston with questions that I have, and one of the things I asked him, I don't really feel I need to ask you because, and not to say that Senator Teston hasn't done this himself, but you've done this overwhelmingly of reaching across the aisle, of representing people even that didn't vote for you. That's important to you, isn't it?
It is. I mean, and it shows in, just even the election results from when I started with the 47% win in a three-way race to now being a 64% seat. I mean, it's It's not just because of the map lines. It's because of the job that I do and the way that I do it. And I think just the way we ran the campaigns and elections committee last session is going to start showing more widespread across the Capitol. People are going to start acting that way, understanding that they have to work together to get something actually done. So I think it was a good start, and I think being in leadership, I can foster that a little bit more.
It speaks to also why you've been reelected, the times that you have and everything. I think it's an important note. And I take that piggybacking off of that into your plans for this next term, especially with the new leadership role and everything. Does that change your plans? Does it or still full steam ahead?
Yeah, you know, when you chair a committee, we have a rule in the assembly that if you're a chair, you can't author a bill in your area. You're just more the referee on a bill. So I think for me on my agenda on elections issues, I get to be more of a bill author, a little bit more in depth on putting together the policy instead of being the referee and somebody bringing it to me in my committee. And I think that's going to also help me find other legislators who are newer to the process. Maybe it's some of the freshmen, maybe some of the Democrats who I can help coach in that area and help them understand they need to build a knowledge on this so we can either A, fix problems that exist, or B, fix perceptions that there were problems that needed to be fixed. And I just got back from D.C., you know, yesterday and did a couple of panel discussions for different groups and just still talking about election stuff at every stop. And being a respected leader nationwide on election integrity is something I take to heart.
When it comes to that, Scott, and I saw that you were doing that yesterday a bit, and it's part of the reason I wanted to ask this next question. And I don't do curveball questions. I don't do gotcha stuff or anything like that. So yeah. I don't mean anything like that with this. But I am curious because I love asking that political brain of yours questions like this. A couple of days ago, Democrats won the final U.S. House race. That is going to keep it from Republican control. But coming out of the election, whether it's the presidency or Senate, Republicans took over quite a bit. It was quite a red sweep. When one party has so much control, what happens then? And I say this in the sense of when, because both parties do this of when they are not in control. Hey, that's wrong. Hey, this is wrong. You know, calling things out and that. And now with this being the case, what happens then when you see that happening? Do you see this as a positive for the country? And I don't mean this as a Republican or Democrat thing. I mean one party having so much control over another.
I mean, if you look at the numbers in the U.S. House, where Republicans are going to have maybe a three-seat majority, you compare it to what we have going on now in the state assembly, where we still have a decent majority of like 9 seats. But even then, for us, you can lose maybe 4, maybe 5 before a bill doesn't get done if you don't bring a Democrat vote over. In Congress, they're going to be able to lose 2, maybe 3 without being able to get a bill done without Democrats. So if somebody's got a really big priority and there's people in their party that don't like it, they're going to have to make it work for a Democrat or two to vote for a bill. And it's just a different style of politics than a lot of Republicans or Democrats who are currently in office are understanding of or able to procure those. So I think it brings a different skill set to the forefront. And I think it's more of I always like to compare it to being like more of a Tommy Thompson type person and understanding that, yes, you have your principles, you know the way things have to end up, but you also have to figure out a way to get them done. If that means you add something here or there to help bring a Democrat or two aboard, you're going to have to do it. So it gives the minority party more of a say. Now, they may not always still get their way, but they'll have much more of a say both here in the assembly and over in the U.S. Capitol. So it's just a different skill set that matters more now.
Yeah, you know, going back to even Lincoln and before that, you had reaching across the aisle. You had Lincoln filling his cabinet with people that ran against him and these kind of things. And we've always seen it as important, but I don't know if you could say that it's ever been more important or it hasn't been as important since then to have that in this country. I don't see, and the numbers show this, that we are not as divisive as people might think. But the election results kind of, I think, fed that monster, if you will, of this divisiveness and everything. And I think that's all the more important for our leaders like yourself and other your teammates over there, if you will, to really approach this that way. and regardless of who, you know, how you might feel even personally about some things, to show goodwill and to show the reaching across the aisle and how things are done. And as I've mentioned many times, whether it's fair or not, the responsibility on Wisconsin politicians, especially when it comes to this, because we are that purple state. There's no getting around it now. Every political cycle pretty much going forward, at least for the time being, it does seem like they are going to have all eyes on Wisconsin. They are going to be focusing on this state and where it lands.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you'll see, especially in Congress, and the reason I bring that up is just having been there the last couple of days, hearing the buzz and feeling what it feels like in D.C. this week, I think it would be really smart for the Democrats on day one to bring forward a bill that they talked about during the campaign cycle that President Trump was behind, like saying, you know, no more taxes on tips. If I was the minority leader in the U.S. House, I would have a Democrat in my team write that bill and bring it to the floor and say, hey, this is what you guys talked about. We agree with it. Let's pass the bill. Mm-hmm. It's a small enough thing, but it really sets the tone for the whole session to say, hey, you know, there were things that we agreed upon in the last 6 months when we were yelling and screaming at each other about these campaigns, but these are the things that we can actually get done that we'll support. Let us write the bill and you guys pass our bill and let's just figure out how to actually work together. I don't know if that's going to happen, obviously, but I just think there's some things that could set that tone and try to get some actual things back home done, because in a 2-year cycle, we literally get maybe 12, 13 months out of those 2 years, actually get, you know, policy drafted and done and budgets created and passed and done. And then that campaign season starts creeping in already. So it's a shorter thing than 2 years because we're not always, you know, sitting at the Capitols for those 2-year cycles. So especially for us and for Congress, who all have 2-year terms, pressure to get stuff done starts now. And yeah, the only way to get stuff done is working together to get it done.
Your colleagues, you're on the clock. You're so right about that. And I think not only do I agree with whether people agree with the bill or not, the idea of getting a bill across the aisle that or across the finish line that it has both has bipartisan support and everything. That you're right. That is a very good idea right now, I think. And something that can show connection with the more unified we come across to the rest of the world, and whether people realize that or not, that's important. That matters. And more importantly, of course, to our fellow Americans to show this, but just as much to the rest of the world to show, hey, we're the ones that made democracy, you know, what it is. And this is how democracies work. And especially in the way the world is right now. We're speaking with Representative Scott Krug, and Scott, I mentioned the representative part in part because of the new district boundaries that are going on. You have lost some, you have gained some. Can you go through that for us?
Yeah, I mean, because that officially kicks in with inauguration on January 6th. The new 72nd Assembly District is no more in Washera County, no more in Portage County. So I've got, you know, the Southwood County I've kept. I've added little bits of areas here in Wood County, such as Babcock and that way up towards Pittsville. Then it goes south from there into Juneau County, all the way down to Camp Douglas and the Germantown area. If you're familiar with the southern part of Castle Rock Lake over there and the Dirty Turtle and Portofino's and all those cool little bars on the southern tip of Castle Rock, that's now my area. And you cross back over 21. And picked up a little bit more in Adams County, so just south of, I basically tell people the entirety of Castle Rock Lake, all of Pete and Well, when you're looking at Adams and Juneau County for the district, whatever's touching that lake on either side is now mine. So it adds Adams and Friendship also. I do lose some eastern Adams County, so as soon as I get out of Rome heading towards Coloma, I don't even have the edge of Adams County over there anymore, so we saw Adams County get sliced up, and now Adams has got 5, you know, state reps that represent it instead of just one or two now. So it's a little chopped up, but I think in the end it fits really well with, you know, the ideas that I've had. I've gone a lot from vegetable production area in Washera County to picking up a lot more cranberries and a lot more cows. So the type of agriculture changes, but it's still a pretty agricultural and tourism district.
What for you, and again, just your perspective, what for you are the positives and negatives of this?
Well, I think for me, it's you know, I had to learn a lot about Washira County when I first inherited that in the 2012 map. But for me in Juneau County, it's such a natural fit. I spent so much time in Juneau at the end of the 90s and 2000s in law enforcement and corrections, and knew a lot of the people over there already and kept those relationships up for a while. So it's a pretty natural fit for me. It also includes my ancestral homelands up there in the little area of Altdorf here near Vesper that, you know, my great-great-grandparents came to in the 1920s. So it's a lot more of the ancestral area that I grew up in and old family names that I recognize and know. So I think it couldn't be any better of a district for me the way it ended up, actually.
It's interesting, too. And with this change, of course, you know, others are the way that this is going. It looks like this is going to be set for now. Or how long is this going to be set, Scott?
Man, you asked some good questions. So the way that we've seen maps change so often because of court decisions or courts flipping, there is an outside possibility that the Supreme Court race in April could put that back on the docket. There are plenty of us, though, that feel like now that we actually took a bill and were not forced by a court to do it, we wrote the governor's office wrote the bill, we passed their maps, he signed it into law. So there's plenty of legal theory that says once you pass a redistricting bill, you can only do it once every 10 years. So I'm under the impression that even if the Supreme Court flips back in early 2025, that these maps are in place until 2030.
Okay. Scott, the last kind of question I have for you before we get into some winter meeting talk that we always like to wrap up with some baseball, I want to discuss a tough one, the unknown. We don't know who will chair which committees in the Assembly or Senate. We're not certain who will be members of which committees right now. So how are you and your colleagues handling that? How is the atmosphere there with when it comes to that one in Madison?
Well, it's a weird little anecdote because the first role that the assistant majority leader gets is to conduct all the office moves. And the way that office moves work at the Capitol is based on who's in leadership, who's got seniority, and we go from there. So one of the things that we had to do this last 2 weeks in all these office moves is, besides listening to people complain that we lost a lot of seats because the Democrats won a lot of seats, was trying to figure out where we're going to be putting people who might end up on the Joint Finance Committee or people who might need an extra space for more staff in their offices. So we had to go through all of the office moves without knowing who these people are going to be yet, because there's some question when, you know, you have a 54 to 45 majority, do the current leaders that get elected in their caucuses have enough votes to get elected on the floor? I think we're kind of waiting to make sure that all of that's settled before we start assigning committee chairs and picking people for the Joint Finance Committee. So all the office moves that we did, we may have to move again, depending on how actual elections for the Speaker and for the Speaker Pro Tem go on Inauguration Day. So it might be a while before we know who chairs committees yet.
With that, I feel that we have another almost standstill going, or not standstill, but we're kind of stuck a little bit, and things can't get in motion and going back to what we were talking about getting work done and getting bills passed. Is there some, I don't want to say pressure, but is there some kind of like, hey, we should get this done, get this figured out so we can get to work?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's fair to say that anybody who's returning as a sophomore, quote, or senior member is going to have a committee. Most of them who have had their committees already are going to keep their committees. So I think most of that's figured out. I think, you know, when I vacated campaigns and elections, that's an open spot. We lost somebody who had the Joint Finance Committee to retirement, so that's an open spot. So there aren't really a lot of open spots. It's just getting technically assigned to those positions for people, because incoming freshmen don't get committee chairs yet because they're just getting there to learn. So basically anybody who's coming back knows that they will have an area of something that they work in and understand. So I think we're pretty well set, just the final announcement of those things. So it's not much of a standstill on anything, actually.
Scott, do you guys do white Christmas gifts? Do you guys around the office or around the Capitol or anything? Do you guys do that? I love the idea.
Yeah,
do you?
Yeah, so everybody's in their offices. We don't, that would be a kind of a crazy cool idea, actually, do like a white elephant party in the entire caucus. We don't quite go that far, but just in our offices each, we just make sure we take care and understand and go through that process for people in our own staff and our offices.
That's cool. That's good to hear. And as we like to always wrap up talking a little Brewers or baseball, certainly no Brewers necessarily to talk right now, but the winter meeting's going on. And one of the bigger free agents out there, Willy Adames, it does look like he is probably going to sign somewhere else, but there are a handful of names out there that the Brewers are being attached to. One of them, Johan Makata, former White Sox, who's seen better years, but wouldn't be a bad addition in there, part-time even if. But there's the young talent that the Brewers have that they're bringing up. It is really impressive and really exciting, I imagine.
Yeah, I think it's all going to depend on where Juan Soto goes and how much money he's going to make over the next quarter century from his massive contract, and then everybody else will start falling into place after that. But yeah, I think the Brewers have some decent options. They don't really have to spend a ton of money on that position because they've got guys like Joey Ortiz could slide over and they could pick up a third baseman if they can't find a top tier shortstop guy. But I don't know. I think they're going to focus too much on the infield instead of, I always say that they don't focus enough on starting pitching and making sure that they can fill that enough that it stays solid through the year. But you just know how the Brewers usually go. So
You hope with that new influx of a little bit of new ownership that maybe they show a little bit more. We'll see what happens. I think one of the biggest things, it's almost not so much just who they sign, but seeing them do some things, open the checkbook a little bit. We just saw the A's spend $67 million. I didn't see that coming. You kind of have to, it's not just keeping up with the Joneses, it's keeping up with your own market. You've got the Bucks that are doing well. You've got the Packers doing their thing. Badger sports has just been celebrated, especially with the way the women's and men's basketball and hockey teams are doing. You've got to kind of almost keep up in your own state with this stuff, I would think.
Well, that's funny because we used to, when I was a kid or even just in my young adult years, we always knew that the Wisconsin teams just couldn't compete. They couldn't win. We'd still watch them. We'd still love them. But now they've all gotten to the point where they've either won a championship like the Bucks, or in the playoffs every year like the Packers and the Brewers. And now our expectations have changed to say, okay, we better win a championship every year now. So I always try to keep that perspective like, hey, when I was younger, we didn't even make the playoffs. Let's just get there first and see what happens. So
my nephew, Mason, I was just talking to him about it over Thanksgiving. On his wall, he's got a picture of Christian Yelich, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Jordan Love. And I'm just thinking about it. I'm like, man, this kid, what he's growing up with, the stars and some of the biggest names, if not biggest names in the sports, it's pretty cool. It is a pretty cool time. And the perspective is always appreciated, whether it's about politics or sports or anything else. Always enjoy talking with you, Scott. Have a great weekend and safe travels out there.
Yeah, you too. It's good to talk to you again. You guys all take care, and we'll see you in person soon.
Scott, if people have follow-up questions, I would like to reach you and get in touch with you. How can they do that?
Yeah, cell phone's always on, 715-323-3293.
Have a great weekend, Scott. We'll talk soon.
You bet. Take care.
I always appreciate the time with Wisconsin State Representative Scott Krug. We'll take a time out. We'll come back with more Midday Magazine here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. As Democrats pick up the pieces from their loss to Donald Trump, one of the first major decisions the party will be making is to select the new chair of the Democratic National Committee. The race for that role now has a major Wisconsin connection. Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, is now officially running for DNC chair. One Democratic source I talked to characterized Wickler as a Goldilocks candidate for the role. He's liked by both centrists and progressives, big dollar donors and grassroots organizers, and knows how important state parties around the country can be in a second Trump term. So, could he be just right for the role? The vote for DNC chair is scheduled for February 1st. A lot can happen between now and then. But whether or not Wickler wins in his bid for the role, it will certainly be a story to watch for Democratic politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Shh, do you want to hear a secret?
You have to keep it between us. The Wisconsin Broadcasters Association is currently accepting nominations for the WBA Local Broadcast Legends Award. We'd like your help in nominating one of our community's best, Pamela Hilke. Here's where you come in. If you or someone you know is directly affected by the work Pam has done at WFHR over the last 47 years, send an email describing the reasons you want to nominate Pam to Laura Berg, laura.berg@civicmedia.us. And thank you for keeping this our little secret.
WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. The holiday season is here, and a seasonally themed locomotive is set to take a trip across Wisconsin. With more, here's Civic Media's Jimmy Cuska.
For the 26th year, Canadian Pacific will be sending its holiday train across North America. Over the next few days, people in Wisconsin can enjoy lights and music as the holiday train rolls through the state. On Saturday, the train will cross into Wisconsin from Illinois, with shows in Sturtevant and Caledonia in the evening. On Sunday, the holiday train will make stops in Wauwatosa, Heartland, Oconomowoc, Watertown, and Columbus. The train will then go through central and western Wisconsin on Monday. The holiday train raises money for local charities and food banks and also brings awareness to food insecurity in area communities. It's free to attend each stop, but it's asked that people going to see the holiday train bring food or money donations to help stock local food pantries. Musical performers at the Wisconsin stops this year are Tierra Kennedy and The Lone Bellow. You can see the schedule of stops on our website. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
The holiday train stops in Portage, Wisconsin Dells, and Mauston on Monday, December 9th. The American Red Cross encourages people to create a new holiday tradition, giving blood or platelets. Lisa Hale has the story.
Rebecca Rockhill, Northeast Wisconsin Executive Director.
We can give a gift to a person who is fighting cancer or a newborn who is needing blood, someone who may be going through a sickle cell crisis. Giving gifts and saving lives as a family together, what a great tradition to start with families going into the new year.
People who give blood between December 9th and 15th will receive a $15 e-gift card.
You can schedule your appointment to give blood by calling the Red Cross, using the Red Cross donor app, or by visiting redcrossblood.org. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie have a new show that they say will be as unforgettable as the first show they did together called, who cares? The duo is collaborating again for Peacock's new show, Paris and Nicole, The Encore. The short 3-episode series drops December 12th on Peacock. Following in the footsteps of Ross and Rachel, Barry Keoghan and Sabrina Carpenter are on a break after dating for a year due to rumors of infidelity on the part of Keoghan, who apparently has been hooking up with a TikToker, probably someone who got famous lip-syncing Carpenter songs. The influencer's name is Becky Hill, and she has 4 million followers on OnlyFans, which is somehow 5 million more than I have. People assume infidelity is the reason they split, but maybe Carpenter finally saw Saltburn and hasn't stopped vomiting. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, low upper teens to 20. With sunshine for tomorrow, it'll warm up into the low 40s for a high. Increasing clouds for Sunday, highs right around 40 degrees, then a chance of showers into Sunday night. Current temp is 30.
The morning show on WFHR, it's comedy?
I think for me, one of the quick ones that I have is like telling time on an analog clock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it takes me a minute.
That
was funny. At least groan worthy. At least groan worthy.
So I needed a minute for it to sink in.
No, that was funny. That was good.
Every weekday morning from 8 to 10, only on 97.5 FM, WFHR.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Freezing your credit sounds drastic, but it's not. In fact, freezing your credit is one of the best ways you can protect yourself from identity theft. Freezing your credit doesn't stop your credit score from going up or down. It's just a way to make sure that nobody can open an account in your name, not even you, without removing your freeze first. So to freeze your credit, you just contact each of the 3 major credit bureaus and you request a credit freeze. Just search up the term credit freeze and you'll find the phone numbers and websites where you can get it all done. And don't worry, you can always unfreeze your credit when you need to apply for new credit, like a loan or something, by contacting each bureau again. For more money tips, check out workmoney.org or text money, M-O-N-E-Y, to 88285. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, he is featured in an article in the Cap Times, and he's the host of Nightlight. Across Civic Media, Pete Schwabba will be joining us. And, of course, this shouldn't be a thing. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Friday, December 6, 2024. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. And today, we are wrapping up the week of Midday Magazine the way we like to with some of our great friends. We have Phil Brown in from the Southwick County Historical Museum. Phil, it is always good to see you and talk with you. Thank you for being here, sir.
Well, thank you, James. Good to see you, too.
And we want to welcome Liz Stern, committee member of the Christmas Tree Walk. Liz, it's great to meet you and great to have you here.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Appreciate the time, you guys. And first out, got to say right away, everything you put into the community, we appreciate. Thank you so much for keeping history alive and so vibrant and exciting in this community. And one of our favorite events of this time of year is the Christmas Tree Walk. We love this. And Phil, we're going walking into our eighth Christmas Tree Walk. This is pretty cool.
Yep, 8 years. And it seems to get better every year, James.
It really
does. And
this
year is no exception.
Go ahead.
No, but we thank you for making, or you know, getting the news out, getting the word out that our 8th annual is coming up. And Liz is one of our sponsors or one of our leaders of getting this together. So, Liz, what do you think? How's it going this year?
Oh, it's going awesome as always. Every time we look at what's happening and we walk in and we see different people have put up different trees and we look and we smile and we say, it's Christmas magic all over again.
Yeah. There's just something about this time of year and that type of spirit, that type of magic. It's it feels so good. as we're talking about history here, Phil, I have to, of course, start with the history of the Christmas Tree Walk. I've got to get to that. I want to touch on that and how long this has been going on.
Yeah, well, since 2015, James, we've started the Christmas Tree Walk. Sue Wesley and Judy Paul, volunteers at the museum, brought up this wonderful idea. And from the very first Christmas Tree Walk in 2015, it allowed people to come into the museum and see our beautiful building, built in 1907, and have it decorated up for Christmas. Really brings people in. And we get a lot of comments from people that have come in that this is their first time coming in. So it's a good way to introduce them to the Historical Society. And it also we also get funny comments. At one time in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, we were the T.B. Scott Public Library for the community. So a lot of people have said, well, I haven't been in here since it was a library. And we always say, well, welcome back.
Yes. It's such a great idea. It's such a great idea. And it is such a wonderful way to maybe introduce people to the museum and bring them to it. And that's all wonderful and everything. But it also is such a great opportunity for the community to be creative, to have some fun with these things. When it comes to the type of people that are putting up these trees and that, who are we talking about here, Liz?
Oh, we have different people. We've had over 100 different people and organizations, groups. So right now, this year, we have individual families that are putting up trees. We have sibling groups that are putting up trees. My sister and I have been doing a tree now. This is our 6th year of doing a tree. We have church groups, civic organizations. So anyone can put up a tree. We have large trees and small trees and Christmas mantles. There are 5 different fireplaces at the museum, and so there are mantles that need to be decorated. And it's just a glorious time. And once you get hooked, you get hooked. People come back over and over, year after year. They say, "Oh, next year my idea. I already have my idea."
Oh,
and away they go.
That's
get
really
that
cool.
idea done. Yeah,
that's wonderful. As far as for this year, is there still room for people to put a tree or do anything?
No, we start early November. We send out letters in the spring to those people who have said that they're interested in doing doing a tree for the next year. So in the spring, we'll be sending out letters to those people who said they're interested and people who have done them this year to see if they would like to do it again. Mm-hmm. And then also during the Christmas tree walk, we have a sign-up sheet. So if someone's interested in doing a tree next year, they can put their name and address down, and then we will contact them in the spring to see if they're still interested in doing a tree or a mantle.
That's wonderful. It's a really smart idea, too. And lots of people over the last 7 years have been able to be a part of this. We've had a lot of people decorating these trees and volunteering and doing this.
Correct. We've had over 100 people that have, wow, over the years helped. This year we have 22 trees, so...
And do I have this right that you guys kind of push them creatively? Like, hey, you know what you did last year? Maybe try something different.
We try to have something different every year. That's cool. So that it is different. When people come in, it's not the same that they saw last year. Everything's brand new and sparkly and glittery. More glitter, the better, right, Phil?
Yeah, right. A lot of glitter. It takes a few months to clean up that glitter after the Christmas tree walk.
I got some experience with that. You let me know if you need some help cleaning up afterwards and everything.
That'd be great. Looking for a volunteer.
Absolutely, yes. I said it on the air. I have to. Absolutely. That's a fun part of this, too, I think, for the people doing these things. Sometimes it could be a little bit, creatively, but it pushes us, and it makes us come up with some of the best things we come up with when we kind of give ourselves a little bit of a challenge to this. That's a really fun part of this.
And another fun part is when you're there decorating, other people are also there decorating their trees and their mantles, and so they'll come over and they'll say, well, what do you think about this? And you'll give your opinion on something. And you'll ask them, you know, opinions on something that you're doing. And they'll say, I think you need to tweak it a little bit more. Cool. Move that over here, or that type of thing. So that's another fun part. Meeting the other people that are doing the decorating is another fun.
Yeah, the camaraderie that can come from that. And we're always so encouraging of people to get, out of their comfort zone a little bit. And you just never know what new friends you might make, what new relationships you might have. We talk about this a lot with business and connecting with people that you may not connect with otherwise. So there's so many layers that are so good about something like this. And the change up is great for the people that come every year as well. The layout changes yearly, depending on the people kind of helping with this,
correct,
right?
Mm-hmm. And this year we have the Girl Scout troop. Oh, can't remember what their troop number is. 6008. We have the Girl Scout troop this year that volunteered to make wreaths in the sunroom. There's a big sunroom at the museum, and so we put wreaths on all of the windows in the sunroom. So they have decorated all the wreaths in the sunroom. And then while they were there, we said, well, we also have a couple mantles that are available right now. And so they said, well, where are they? So we took them around and showed them the mantles, and they decided they would do a mantle, too. So they made beautiful gingerbread houses.
Oh, good idea.
To put on the mantle.
That's cool. That's great.
So, and most of them had never been to the museum before either. So.
Well, and here's one other thing that I wanted to mention with that, Liz, and I appreciate you setting me up like that, because when you have two people out there that run these organizations or anything, especially when it comes to our Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, any of our youth, our high schools and, you know, grade schools and all that, they come to these things and the kids enjoy it. It's a wonderful thing for the parents, the teachers, kids, all involved. And it also has that added bonus of those brains are sponges, and they soak this in, and they see the museum, and they soak in this history, and they remember it, and they see adults attending this and caring about history and paying attention to the museum, and that inclines them more and more as they get older to do that.
Right.
It has that added bonus of that. While these trees are beautiful, the creativity part is wonderful, and it's a great tradition that we love around here. And like we talked about earlier, Phil, it brings people to the museum that may not otherwise. It also has that added bonus of things like this, where we're influencing the youth to the future and hopefully keeping this museum around for hundreds and hundreds of years, and maybe even giving Phil a break one day. Maybe
well,
even doing
thanks.
That.
And we've incorporated some other things into the museum for the Christmas tree walk for children, such as we have little mice hidden all over the place.
There's, great idea.
Surprises under the stairway. So the kids enjoy trying to find the first time that was done, that, you know, we would say, have you looked under the stairway, mm-hmm, and then they'd look, and then they'd be laying on the floor of the museum looking under the stairway to see what the mice were doing under the stairway.
One thing that that comes up from listeners or something, when it comes to this event, Phil, one of the things I was thinking is, well, we've got a lot of precious items in this museum. We've got a lot of things that are sensitive and that. How does that work with something like this going on at the event, with an event like this happening?
Yeah, that's a very good point, James, because we do have some valuable artifacts that are in the museum, and we really encourage people to not only look at the trees, but some of the artifacts that we have. Anything of real value we will keep in a safe place. But for the most part, a lot of our artifacts are behind glass areas and yeah, also plastic. And but that's part of the fun, that you can go into one of our rooms. I believe we have, 11 rooms that are decorated? Mm-hmm. So 11 rooms, and 11 rooms with a lot of history in there.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are we looking at the beautiful trees, but we're learning about local history of the Southwood County area. And so it's just wonderful to have the two combined.
We're speaking with Phil Brown of the Southwood County Historical Museum and Liz Stern, committee member of the Christmas Tree Walk. We're going to be getting into the details of how you can experience the walk and take part in it yourself. But I do want to shout out and talk about two of my favorite coffee shops in this whole entire area. From the ground up, Caribou Coffee. Can't get enough of both of them. And they did something really cool here, you guys. They donated some hot chocolate and coffee to the event.
Yes, they did. We were very, very thankful for that.
Yeah.
So we have coffee and hot chocolate. And then we also have cookies.
Oh, okay. Now, you had me.
That
you had
always
me already,
goes with the coffee and hot chocolate.
Yeah, you got to have that. You got to have it. But a big shout out to them. And it again speaks to how much this event is loved and respected when you see local businesses being a part of it. A big shout out to them. Buying local, supporting local, including supporting each other and our nonprofits. And the museum is extremely fortunate with this, too, to be located where they are, especially Phil.
Mm-hmm.
This helps out with what we're talking about with the Christmas Tree Walk.
Yeah, and having that beautiful home on historic 3rd Street really brings attention to the wonderful neighborhood. It's really a who's who of people that built and made Wisconsin Rapids area such a successful area. As a matter of fact, during the year, or during the time that we're open, during the summertime, we're open Memorial Day to Labor Day. And we have tours of the 3rd Street area, and we're able to do some bios on the people that lived on 3rd Street. So it's a lot of fun. And once again, we can promote that as people come in to look at all the Christmas trees.
Yeah.
So it's a real win-win situation. It helps get us into the Christmas spirit, and it also helps us with a reminder that we are open during the summer months. And if for some reason you have a request, we have somebody there every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So if you leave a message on the phone or you stop in, usually there's somebody that can assist you in finding some local history. If you're doing family genealogy and doing some research on some of the former businesses, it really helps out. But right now, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas over at that beautiful home, James.
Yeah, it really is. Let's get right into the details of this. The 8th Annual Christmas Tree Walk. You guys are going to have 21 individually decorated trees. That is amazing, you guys. That is really cool. Even just fitting them in there is pretty impressive to be honest. But let alone have them decorated.
That was a task.
Yeah, I bet. That's another show we'll probably have to do, too, where we talk about just the logistics of that. But also, three rooms, three mantles, and even as you mentioned, Liz, that the Girl Scout Troop 6008 joining you guys. So all this fun going on and the opening of the doors to the community going to be going on to, this Saturday, December 7th. It kicks off December 7th, 8th, and 9th from 12 to 4. Then we come back on December 13th from 5 to 8. It'll be open December 14th and 15th, 12 to 4. And make sure you get in there by then, because that is when everything will be wrapping up. This is, of course, a free event to all ages. We welcome all ages, welcome all comers, especially families, as I mentioned, with young people, young kids and everything, and getting them to the museum and attending the event as well. And there is one other thing we want to make sure to remind everybody when it comes to parking, Phil.
Oh, parking is usually a problem, but along Second Street, along the river, we have lots of parking spots. Fortunately, we don't have a lot of snow or ice this year, so it's pretty safe. But I always tend to park down on Second Street, and then we have a stairway leading up to the museum. But the parking lot itself is rather limited. It's rather small. It's difficult to park, and it's even more difficult to leave. You have to back up and then go forward, back up, forward, back up, forward, and then finally you can go. So if there's any way that anybody that needs assistance, please drop them off at the front door, and then it's probably easier to park below the hill on Second Street. No parking on Third Street, but Second Street along the river, there's lots of parking.
You mentioned earlier in a conversation, Phil, and we've talked about this before too, the history of that area and some of the more beautiful houses and some of those things that are over there. This parking situation kind of adds to that history. It kind of gives you a lean into it right away. Like, well, there's a reason it's like this, and you know that it's a perfect segue. It really is.
It really is, because it's kind of fun, because if you park a block away, you're walking down Third Street and viewing some of the beautiful homes that have been there for over 100 years.
Yeah.
So it really gives you that feeling of going back in time.
And that's one of my personally favorite things to do is take the jump into a time machine, and by that going into the museum and really, really being able to understand more and more of this history. We talk about this with our friends from the Historic Point Boss a lot, too, and the importance of keeping history alive and the pride we can take in it in this area, and having a tie to these history and the trailblazers, the people that paved the way for us to be here now and do these things like the 8th Annual Christmas Tree Walk or having a fun radio show like this or something. It gives us an opportunity to do those things. And I don't know that there's a better, especially the end of the year is such a good time to have these things. I don't know if there's ever a bad time, but we all do end of year things, whether it's on TV or in media or even in our own heads, and kind of a wrap up of the year. It's something very important in my culture and our Jewish culture. And every year we have that's how we end the year with our Jewish New Year is wrapping up and kind of looking at the past year like that. So something beautiful about that adds to the season. And especially for you guys, because we were kind of talking about this in our pregame a little bit. This is the wrap up of the season for you guys, really, and kind of closing the doors for a little while and everything. When it comes to that, I don't want to say break, but for lack of a better word, that break between now and when the doors open again, we'll touch on that, by the way, too, and make sure to get that out there. But in that kind of off season, if you will, Phil, how does that work with the museum? Do you guys find yourselves kind of trying to come up with new things, or just kind of, fine tuning what you do?
Yeah, absolutely, because January, February, March, April are a good time to redo our displays. We're always thinking about the next displays. As a matter of fact, coming up in the summer of 2025, we're looking at honoring the past of Consolidated Papers. And we have a lot of information that has happened over well over 100 years of that papermaking tradition here in Wisconsin Rapids. And Southwood County also includes Nakusa and Port Edwards.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So we have a chance to look at Nakusa Edwards Paper Company as well. But such a strong part of our history. And so we like to share that kind of information. We also have some tours that we want to do. Number one, the Third Street tour is always one of my favorite. It's supposed to take about an hour. But you know me, I tend to talk too much sometimes because I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
So we go start at the Historical Society on Third Street, work our way down towards Riverview Hospital, and then back. And it really is fun because we have stories about all these pioneers that really put Wisconsin Rapids on the map. So that four-month period from January through April really gives us a chance to get the museum ready for the upcoming season.
When it comes to all great ideas, Phil, and really exciting to hear about, I think, especially when it comes to the mill, current residents and people, it's very interesting history and everything. But one of the things I think about a lot of the times when I think of the museum or some of the things you have there is certainly this current generation. But, man, 10, 20 years from now, when we're farther removed from some of these things and some of the people that even worked at the mill are maybe not here with us or what have you, it's important history to be able to keep alive. It's important history to be able to tell these stories. I don't know that you have the success of this central Wisconsin area without these mills. That's an integral part of our history, and it's really cool to see it being, you know, brought in and talked about and having even more details and things that people may not even know that lived in this area their whole lives.
Yeah, and that's the way we can do it. That's what historical societies and historical museums do best. We can look back. And then as we move forward, we can never relive the past, but we can learn about the past.
When it comes to reopening of the museum and everything, Phil, let's get into that a little bit and remind everybody of when you guys will be closing, when you'll be back opening after the Christmas tree walk.
Yeah, so we're pretty much open through mid-December, and the next 2 weeks, the Christmas tree walk is our main focus. And then we will be open Memorial Day weekend, and we have lots of exhibits and lots of special events going on through the summer. We'll be probably back on the air with you, James, to talk about the upcoming season. We really appreciate what you do for the community because you really get the word out. And it's greatly appreciated. But there's never a dull moment. We're always thinking. We're always dealing with people that have requests. And it really is a wonderful passion of ours to share with others.
And we appreciate that passion, appreciate the energy and everything you put into it. Again, the 8th Annual Christmas Tree Walk kicks off this weekend, everybody, December 7th, 8th, and 9th. It'll be going from 12 to 4. And then it'll also be happening December 13th from 5 to 8, December 14th and 15th, 12 to 4. Be sure to check out all 11 rooms, the Holiday Magic. This is free for all ages. Head on over to the Southwick County Historical Museum at 540 3rd Street South, right here in Wisconsin Rapids. And Phil, if they want to find out more information, should we send them to the website? Is that a good place to go?
That would be a very good place to go.
Okay.
And we can find that at swch-museum.com.
And I see a phone number here for inquiries or other questions, 715-423-1580, 423-1580. Thank you both so much for the time, everything you were putting into this community. Liz, you did too good of a job. You're going to have to come back sometime. You're going to come back next year for the Christmas Tree Walk conversation.
Well, this will be my sixth year, so.
We'll look at
maybe there'll be a seventh.
I hope so. Thank you again, Liz. Phil, we'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you, James.
Yeah, appreciate the time, you two. And a big thank you to Pam Helke doing the amazing scheduling she does on this show week in and week out. We appreciate you, Pam. Appreciate all of you out there. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will talk to you sooner than later right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
The Todd Alba Show.
Pat Kreitlow, all your time in the media, television, radio, what have you, what was one or two of the oddest things that people were complaining about?
As a TV anchor, your hair.
You have some of the finest hair around. How could anybody criticize your hair?
Oh, well, because a consultant forced me to change it.
Were there focus groups?
I'm not aware of any focus groups other than the audience, which universally hated it. It was a bowl haircut.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Civic Media sports guru Mike Clemens, Lisa O'Hearn from the Sister Bay Historical Society, and it's a bar band Friday night. So Terry Barr joins the show with great music.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Jeffrey from Madison.
I worked for the city of Madison for 34 years. Act 10 cost me $42,000.
Yep.
In 1977, the state of Wisconsin passed a law that says public employees cannot strike. With Act 10, now we can't bargain for working conditions and benefits, so they basically turned public employees into second-class citizens.
Yes.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
CBS News Brief.